Okay, so I guess we'll get underway. On Friday, we'll have our first exam. Today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, first of all, I'll give you a quick, what happened there? Okay, I guess we're working. I'll give you a quick overview of the material to be covered on the exam. From a former point of view, we'll do a practice exam, but this is just blinking for some reason. I'm not sure why. Let me get started with a quick review. Although maybe the first thing I should do is just pause and see if there's any questions coming into this review. One thing I want to point out is you'll note at the top of the practice exam it says no calculators. No calculators will be involved or will be allowed for the first exam either. Because the only real calculations that you could possibly need a calculator for would be to add integers together. I'll design the problem so you're not adding fractions or other real numbers. You shouldn't need a calculator, except if you have one of the real fancy calculators where you plug in a matrix and it'll tell you what the inverse is. That's not allowed. In fact, the main purpose of the first exam is to drill you on row reduction. Now, not so much because that's a particular calculation that is used over and over again. That's true. But the main reason I want you to do those row reduction calculations by hand is that you can interpret the calculation as you're working through it. You can sort of see how you're getting towards the solution. You can see whether or not fairly early on, if the equations have a contradiction, that they have a contradiction, et cetera. So I'll show you as I work out the practice exam. I'm going to do it right on the exam paper to show you that there's plenty of room to do the row reduction calculations, etc. And all you have to do is to approach these row reduction problems with the right strategy. You row reduce to row echelon form, and then you systematically proceed to reduce row echelon form until you get your unique matrix in reduce row echelon form. Okay, so all that's coming. Let me quickly step through the material we've covered. I'll just I actually did this last Friday, but in the first week of course, we concentrated on just the real fundamental vector operations, addition, scalar multiplication, taking linear combinations of vectors to produce new vectors. Sorry, I don't know why this thing is flashing this way. Maybe it will help if I disconnect, reconnect. Okay, well, I hope it's stable. So the first week of class, we just did this rudimentary basic arithmetic, this underlying linear algebra. We also introduced the fundamental geometric objects for the course, the notion of what a hyperplane is, an infinite set of vectors in general, because these parameters, t1 through tk, are allowed to range over the entire real line. This is a common geometric construction, and in particular, when we solve linear systems or systems of linear equations, the solution sets are always going to be sets of this form. Well, provided they have solutions. And so here you see, for example, a single equation in m variables, single linear equation in m variables, can be expressed in terms as expressed as a hyperplane. What I did here is I solved for the last component in terms of the earlier variables x1 to xm minus 1, and I'm able to express any solution of this equation as a particular vector that lives on a hyperplane because it has this form. A constant vector plus a free variable times another constant vector in similar terms until we have the last free variable times the last constant vector. All right, so I should stress that my overview here is not going to look that much like the exam because I won't be testing you directly on these things, but rather how they occur in problems. So once we had vectors down, I introduced matrices. I introduced them, by the way, as a way of encapsulating the data that goes into specifying a system of, say, n equations and m unknowns, we could capture that in a matrix. In fact, ideally, we capture it in an augmented matrix, where effectively we erase all the variables, we erase all the plus signs and the like, and we just put square brackets over everything to get this nice rectangular arrangement of, on the left-hand side, a matrix with n rows and n columns, and this last column representing the inhomogeneous terms, the numbers that appear on the right-hand side. Then what we did, once I was able to translate a linear system into a matrix reformulation, I told you that it's not just writing the data down next to one another. The idea was, in fact, when I take a linear system, A11, X1, plus A1m xm equals, say, B1, and we have similar equations, N1 x1 plus dot 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 plus AN M X M equals B N. So similar sets of equations. We could write this down as a matrix equation, A X equals B, where A is exactly the coefficients, A11 through A1M, AN1 through ANM. This column vector contains all the variables. And on the right-hand side, we have this vector B1 through BN. And the point of introducing matrix multiplication, aside from just taking the data that specifies you need to specify a given linear system and putting different data structures next to one another. In fact, we can define this, writing this matrix adjacent to this matrix is the matrix product. And we then define the matrix product as the new matrix you create by taking the rows of the first factor, taking their dot products with the columns of the second factor, and arranging those results in another rectangular array. So this matrix multiplication, you have two matrices and they multiply together, you can create a new matrix by taking the ith row of A, and that's going to be a list of as many numbers as you have columns of A, and taking its dot product with the jth column of the other factor, B. And again, if you're looking at the columns of the matrix B, it's going to have as many entries in that column as you have rows. So what you need in order for that dot product to be fine is the number of columns of the first factor. That will tell you how many components are in this vector, has to equal the number of rows of the second factor. And then you can calculate all these inner products. You'll get one for each row of A and one in each column of J. And so effectively you get a multiplication rule that works like if you have an N times M matrix, because you have to have this match, it can only multiply, an N by M matrix can only multiply from the left a matrix with the same number of rows as we have columns there. So you might have N by P, and then what's going to get kicked out of that matrix multiplication is going to be a matrix with N rows and P columns. So you need to know these formulas, one for explicitly computing the entries of a product, and the other one, a quick and dirty formula, tells you what kind of matrix is going to get kicked out when I multiply an N by M matrix times an N by P matrix. Okay, so you'll need to be able to carry out some matrix multiplication, but as you'll see on the practice exam, I only asked you to do this once. But you also have some additional operations. You can add matrices together just like you add vectors. You add similar entries of matrices that have exactly the same size. So a 2x3 matrix can be combined with another 2x3 matrix simply by adding entries in the same slot together. And similarly, you can scalar multiply, and you can take the transpose of matrix. But then once we introduce those objects, the idea was to do something with them. And the first thing we did was we solved linear systems. But the technique we use for solving linear systems is different from what you learned in high school. Instead of picking one variable and using the first equation to eliminate that, substituting the result into subsequent equations and doing more, selecting of variables to solve for and then substituting into subsequent equation, all that apparatus we avoided. Rather, what we did is we thought of the problem of solving a linear system as the problem of how to convert the given set of equations into a set of equations that could be interpreted as the solution. And the way we would do that, we would perform operations on the equations that wouldn't change the solution set. Things like interchanging the order of equations, or multiplying an equation by a non-zero number, or replacing an equation by a sum with another equation. So that I showed you that those three operations could actually be effective in taking an arbitrary set of equations and giving and producing what could be interpreted as the equations of the solution. But then we quickly moved into a more efficient way of doing the same thing. It's just that instead of operating directly on the equations, we would instead, since every system of equation corresponds to a particular augmented matrix, the idea was to, rather than manipulate equations, we would just manipulate the corresponding augmented matrix, Nn, Bn. And then what we needed then is operations that would be sort of the image of what we do to equations, but in operating directly on the rows of a matrix. So each row of the augmented matrix corresponds to an equation. So if I do something to an equation, it's going to have a corresponding action on this augmented matrix. And that's exactly what these elementary row operations are. There were three of them. And the way they worked was, first of all, we could change the order of equations, and that corresponded to changing the order of rows of the matrix, get interchange two rows. Or we could take a row and multiply it by a non-zero number, or replace it by its multiple by a non-zero number. Or the third thing we allowed ourselves to do was take a row and replace it with its sum with a multiple of another row. So just using these three operations, we were able to take an arbitrary matrix and convert it first into row echelon form, then into reduced row echelon form. So this is the first step in row reduction. But I split these apart into two steps simply because your strategy changes as you try to go from row echelon form to reduced row echelon form. This is typically the second step. And so here what you're shooting for is a matrix where the pivots all occur in this downward staircase. So everywhere to the right and below a pivot, or sorry, to the left and below a pivot, you should have nothing but zeros, but you can have non-zero entries sitting above the pivots or off to the right of pivots. But this is your first goal, and the way you achieve this for the most part is by using this third row operation. Your principal task is to, given a pivot up in this corner here, is to clear out the entries below. So you take multiples of the first row precisely so that when you add it to a lower row, you can cancel that leading entry. And then once you've reached row echelon form, your strategy changes. You have two more requirements in order to be in reduced row echelon form. You need the pivots one, so you convert pivots to ones. And you also have to clear out the entries above pivots. But once you've reached row echelon form, you use row rescalings to convert the value of the pivots equal to the numerical value 1. And then you work from lower rows to clear out entries that sit above pivots in lower rows. And then again, you're using this third row operation to achieve that. Once you get to a matrix in reduced row echelon form, then you have a unique matrix, and we interpret that as the augmented matrix of the solution. What remains then to solve a linear system is to go from the matrix, augmented matrix in reduced row echelon form, and write down the solution set as a hyperplane. But in between here, going from the augmented matrix in reduced row echelon form to the hyperplane, a step in between is figuring out which variables are going to be free variables and which variables are going to be fixed variables. That information you get from the reduced row echelon form. The fixed variables are going to correspond to columns of the augmented matrix in reduced row echelon form that contain pivots. And the free variables are going to correspond to columns that don't contain pivots. Once you've made the decision of what variables are free and what variables are fixed, You write down the equations corresponding to this matrix. You move the free variables over to the right-hand side, and then you can now begin to formulate a generic solution vector, the form of any vector that would actually satisfy the original system. So I'm going to step through this, and we're going to do several examples of this. Well, actually one example of each step, I think, is the way the practical exam is worked out. And then the last thing we've talked about is how to find an inverse of a matrix. Inverse of a matrix, it would be the unique matrix set. Well, first of all, it only exists for square matrices, but it's the unique square matrix of the same size as the original matrix, such that whether you multiply from the left or the right by this matrix, you get the identity matrix. So I guess what I want to say here is that what I mean by an inverse is that, say, B is A to the minus first if either B times A is equal to the identity matrix, or A times B is equal to the identity matrix, because these two conditions, I've told you all, it's difficult to prove, but in fact, if one of these equations is true, the other one is also true. So really, to identify an inverse of a given matrix, you just got to find some matrix that when you multiply from either side by that matrix, you get the identity matrix. All right, and then we developed a means for calculating these inverse matrices. What it boiled down to is writing down your original matrix and the identity matrix adjoined to it, row reduce this double matrix to reduce your echelon form. And then if the left-hand side row reduces to the identity matrix, then whatever happened to the right-hand side, that would be your new A to minus first. On the other hand, if it, in the reduced echelon form of this double matrix, the right-hand side is not the identity matrix, then your conclusion is that the A does not have an inverse. And then last thing we covered, on Friday's lecture and a little bit on Monday, was this fundamental theorem of matrix inverses, which showed you relationships between a matrix having an inverse, the solvability of linear systems, and in fact, the ability to factorize a matrix in terms of elementary matrices. All right, so in fact, I don't think on the practice exam, this fundamental theorem does not appear explicitly. And I will adhere to my policy of writing exams that are very, very close to the practice exam. So maybe you don't have to worry so much about this fundamental theorem. Although as soon as we get through with the exam, our next collecting of material, it's going to be more theoretical, more like the statement of this theorem than the calculations that we've been working on so far. Okay, so let me now just pause and ask you any questions about what might be covered on the exam, and then we'll step through a practice exam. Okay, so let's proceed with the practice exam. Again, I'm going to emphasize no calculators will be allowed on the exam. You should not need them. As long as you can add 2 to 5 and see it at 7, you won't need a calculator. Yes.
I was wondering if you would be able to help from one of our assignments.
Oh, sure.
It's like the inverse of this matrix, but it has variables in it.
Oh, well, yeah. You can don't be upset by variables. You just have to remember that they're variables and not try to evaluate them explicitly. So, let's see. What is that matrix? It's 1A minus A1. Okay. 1A minus A1, I think it was. All right, so you can still row reduce this thing. So what you might do is take the matrix A, form the matrix A adjoined with I. And what that will be, sorry, all my pens are, it's going to be 1A minus A1 adjoined with 1, 0, 0, 1. All right, so we want to get this first in row echelon form. So we'll need to get rid of this entry there. So what I'll do is I'll send row 2 to row 2 plus A times row 1. Right, that's exactly what I need to add to the second row in order to get rid of that pivot in the second row. And what we'll get here, first row is not changing, 1, 0, and then minus A plus A times 1 is going to equal 0. 1 plus, I guess it's going to be, it's going to be A squared there. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to add to the second row A times the first row, and A times A is going to equal A squared. And then I'll have A plus 0 is A, and 0 plus 1 is 1. All right, and let's see. Next thing we might do is we have it in row echelon form. Next thing we'll want to do is get the pivots equal to 1, so I'll send row 2 to 1 over A squared times row. Let's see. Oh, yeah, 1. When I add, multiply, it'd be 1 plus A squared. So that would be 1 over 1 plus A squared times that. And this is going to produce a matrix. What am I trying to do? I'm trying to get rid of that guy. And so I guess I need, first I'm just renormalizing this guy. 1, A, 1, 0, 0, 1, A divided by 1 plus A squared, and then 1 divided by 1 plus A squared. And then the last thing to do is to clear out this entry here. And so, I'm sorry, let's see if I can work here. I'm going to send row 1 to row 1 minus minus A times the second row. And that's going to produce a matrix 1, 0. And let's see, we have 1. Minus A times row 2, so that's going to be 1 minus A squared divided by 1 plus A squared. And then here we'll have 0 minus A 1 plus A squared. And then second row is not changing. 0, 0, 1, and then A divided by 1 plus A squared, 1 divided by 1 plus A squared. Okay, then this matrix here, I mean, you could simplify maybe these entries, but this matrix here is going to be your inverse.
And I will say that I think that I put that in the WebAssign market wrong. You might check in with this problem on WebAssign.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's, yeah. It may be that it really wanted you to simplify these terms. I don't know if you tried to simplify these terms.
I did. I actually did it according to the student solutions manual and your answer. And it didn't like anything. And they didn't give us a regular blank to put it in. We were also typing into one of those little slots and having to use a slash and a caret. So it was a problem.
It's maybe it's just a problem with WebAssign. Well, yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, so, but remember when you do enter matrices as a result, the idea is that they're only going to give you entries for one row at a time, and you put in one row each entry in each box. And then you, there's a little arrow below that you click on to bring up a second row that you can then put the individual entries in. So it could also have been, for some students, the just entering their answer correctly. So so what happens on WebAssign is that if you want to input, so if you want to give a 2x2 matrix as an answer, then what you do is WebAssign will, first of all, it'll show you two blanks. Well, I need four entries for a 2x2 matrix. What you're supposed to do is, well, this is your matrix, A, B, C, D. You put the A and the B to get the first row, and then there's a little symbol here, like a little down arrow or something like that. You click on that after you've entered this, and it'll bring up a second set of empty boxes, and then you put the remaining entries there. And then you fed WebAssign your answer. But unfortunately, when you first look at the entry boxes that WebAssign displays, you only see two boxes for, even when your answer is a 2x2 matrix. This second row doesn't appear until you filled in the first row and click this little arrow button at the bottom.
There were four blanks.
Oh, it could have been. It could have been that they were expecting the full augmented matrix. And so you would enter the four entries of this first row with the augmented matrix, and then you would have to enter the second row separately.
It was 400, so it was
2-2. Oh, it was 2-2? Oh, okay.
It should be like that.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, yeah. Okay, well... Yeah,
I'm not seeing that carrot thing. I haven't
put it
up right here. I'm giving up.
Okay, well, so it did give you the four entries you needed.
Yes.
So
I kept getting it wrong.
So. It kept giving it wrong. Yeah. You know, it's actually a little bit of a problem to for a computer to do symbolic algebra. If these had been numbers, I'm sure there would have been no problem at all. When you have symbols, that's where computer systems. Well, it should nowadays. Nowadays, it's really common to do symbolic algebra on computers. But apparently, WebAssign is not good at that. Okay. Well, anyway, don't worry. Don't worry too much about this particular problem. I've shown you how you do it, and in fact, on the exam, I promise you won't have to work with variables. Except when you're trying to write down solutions and distinguishing between free variables and fixed variables. Okay, so what do I have? I have 20 minutes. Let's see if I can get through this exam. I think I can, actually. I worked it out prior to class, and it was fairly simple. So in this first problem, you're to multiply matrices together. Just write them down next to one another, 2 minus 1, 3, 1. And 1, 0, 1, 0, minus 1, 0. Now, what I suggest you do is, before you even get started calculating, figure out what kind of matrix is going to be produced. So this is a matrix with 3 rows, 2 columns, and it's multiplying a matrix with 2 rows and 3 columns. Those inner dimensions match, so that's good. So the matrix is going to be, the product is going to be defined, and what it's going to produce is a 3x3 matrix, right? It's the outer dimensions that give you the dimensions of the product, and the inner dimensions have to match. But now we can compute first entry in the first row and first column of the product is going to be the dot product of the first row vector of the first factor with the first column vector of the second factor. So that will be 1 plus 0 is 1. And then to get the entry in the second column, I use the second column of the second factor. So I have 0 plus 0. And then 1 plus 0 is 1. Now I move to the second row. I continue to take dot products. 2 plus 0 is 2. 0 minus 1 times minus 1 is 1. We'll get 1 there, and then 2 plus 0 is 2. And then we'll have, let's see, 3 plus 0 is 3. 0 minus 1, and then 3 plus 0 is 3. All right, there's a quick matrix multiplication. I hope by just following what my fingertips are doing, you can see how I could do most of those dot products in my head. All right, then in the second problem on the exam, this is no calculations at all. My point of giving you these matrices is not to have you do any row reduction or look for the solutions, but rather what I want you to do in this problem is interpret these matrices, tell me what kind of equations they came from, and then tell me a little bit about the solution just from the fact that these matrices are already in row echelon form. All right, so what I ask is, how many equations were there? How many variables? Does this system have a solution? And if it does have a solution, what's the size of that solution set? How many free variables are there? Okay, so let's look at this first one. Let's look at this second one first, so I can address this second question. Here we have three rows in this matrix. So we came from a system of three equations, and there's four columns on this left-hand side. So this particular example came from three equations in 1, 2, 3, 4, four unknowns. That answers the first question. Does it have a solution? No, because there's no solution, because the second row, if you convert back to equation, it says that 0 has to equal minus 1. You put 0 times x1, 0 times x2, 0 times x3, 0 times x4 is equal to minus 1, or that simplifies to simply 0 is equal to minus 1, which is a contradiction. So because one of the equations associated to this augmented matrix is contradictory, there's going to be no solution. And the problem ends here. It doesn't make, since you don't have any solution, it doesn't make sense to talk about the number of free variables in the solution. All right, and then for the, I don't want to write up there. Maybe I'll bring this down a little bit. For this first augmented matrix, always look at what's going on with the pivots first before we do any interpretation. Aside from the fact that we have four rows, so we have four equations, and we have four columns on the left-hand side, so that means we have four associated variables, we do have a solution. Because we don't have this contradictory situation. We don't have any pivots in this final column. In this case, we did, and that's why we didn't have a solution. But we don't have that problem with this matrix, so we are going to have a solution. And to count the number of free variables, we look for the number of columns on the left that don't have pivots. And it's only x3. So x3 is the only free variable. So it's going to be a one-dimensional solution set for whatever linear system this augmented matrix came from. And then here we have four equations in three variables. It does have a solution, right? We don't have this problem. And then each column on the left-hand side contains a pivot. And so there are no free parameters in the solution. That means you have a unique solution. In fact, the equations that come from this augmented matrix say that x1 has to equal 3, x2 has to, there's a term here, but you can basically see that if you can reduce this to reducer echelon form, you're going to get a unique number for x1, x2, and x3. Anyway, this solves the problem. To get, answer that last question, what you're doing is you're counting the number of columns that do not have pivots. That will give you the number of free variables. It will give you the dimension of your solution. And that's all I wanted you to do on this problem. No calculations. I just wanted you to interpret these matrices. All right. And so in particular, well, I always have some students who see an augmented matrix and they try to write down the hyperplane solution. It's not necessary for this problem. You'll get opportunities to write solutions in terms of hyperplanes a little later on in the exam. All right, now, the next thing I like to do on my exams, at least the first exam in linear algebra, is I want you to be able to solve linear systems, but that's kind of a long process, right? You have to convert to augmented matrix, you have to row reduce to row echelon form, you have to further row reduce to reduce row echelon form, and then you have to write the solution corresponding to the augmented matrix in reduced echelon form. You have to formulate that solution as a hyperplane. I don't do that in all in one problem. Rather, I do, I break that whole procedure up into steps, and I test you on the individual steps. So, in this first problem four, I give you an augmented matrix. You don't have to find the corresponding solution. All I want you to do is, whoops, I must be on problem three, really. All I want you to do initially is take this system of equations, write down the augmented matrix, and get halfway through the row reduction process. Write down the augmented matrix for this linear system, and then row reduce it to just row echelon form. Well, let me see if I can carry that out. I'm on a pen here. All right, so let's look on screen here. Yeah, this will work. All right, so we're going to have 0 times x1, minus 1 times x2, 2 times x3 is going to equal 1. That's the first row, the augmented matrix corresponding to this linear system. Then we'll have 2, 1, 1, 0. Continue that line down. And then minus 1, 1, 1, 3. All right. That's the augmented matrix. Now we'll row reduce. So what do we got to do? We need a pivot up in this corner. Our row reduction process to row echelon form starts by getting a pivot up in this upper left-hand corner, then clearing out the entries below it. So what I might do is switch the first and the third rows. Then I'll get minus 1, 1, 1, 3, 2, 1, 1, 0, 0, minus 1, 2, 1. Now I've got a pivot up in this corner, and I can use it to clear out the pivot below. And so the next step would then be to focus on that guy and get rid of it by sending row 2 to row 2 minus 2 times row 1, or I guess plus, because I already have a minus sign there. And what we'll get is first row is not changing. Third row is not changing. 1, 2, 1. And then what happens second row? I'm going to multiply the first row times 2 and then add it to the second row. So I'll have 2 minus 2 is 0. 1 plus 2 is 3. 1 plus 2 is 3. And 0 plus 3 is 3. All right, so we've gotten that far. Now let's see.
The B column would be 6.
Oh, it would be 6, you're right. Yeah, 3 plus 3 is 6. All right. Right. And then I guess we'll quickly, we can leave this as minus 1, 1, 1, 3. Let's change this to 1 just to make it simpler. I'll divide the second row by 2. I'll leave the third row alone. Because all I'm trying to do is get to row echelon form. And the last step I'll do is I'll replace the third row by its sum with the second row. So row 3 is going to go to row 3 plus row 2. And then I'll get a matrix minus 1, 1, 1, 3, 0, 1, 1, 2. And now 0, 1 plus minus 1 is 0. 1 plus 3 is 3. 2 plus 3 is 3. All right. And then the problem ends because I've now reached a matrix where the pivots are occurring in the proper downward staircase so that this matrix is actually in row echelon form. All right. So that's typically going to be one kind of problem you'll see on the exam. But it's not the end of row reduction if we were trying to find the solution set of the corresponding set of linear equations. The next step you would do is you would try to take the augmented matrix in row echelon form and massage it further until you reach reduced row echelon form. But rather than work from this matrix where you may or may have not have gotten the correct answer, I give you a fresh matrix to start off with, and I ask you to proceed and convert it into reduced row echelon form. Well, that means you've got to get the pivots all equal to 1. So the first row is going to have to be divided by 2. Second row is going to have to be divided by 3. And the third row, divide that by minus 2. Then you'll get a new matrix, 1, 1, 2, 3, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 2, 2, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, minus 1, and the last row remained all zeros. Okay, so now we've got it in row echelon form, and the pivots are all equal to 1. The last thing to do is clear out the entries that are lying above pivots. So that one there, and those two entries, let me put a squiggle here. These are actually the problem entries. And we'll use now lower rows to clear out entries that sit above pivots. And we start in this lower right-hand corner, clear out the entries above its pivot, and then we'll move over to the next pivot. And in a second step, we'll clear out this entry here. So what we would do first maybe is send row 1 to row 1 minus row 3. That's so that this entry can be used to get rid of the entry in this pivot above it, or this entry above the pivot in the third row. And we'll send row 2 to row 2 minus 2 times row 3. That will clear out this entry. And what we'll get is 1, 1, 2, 3. Okay, now here's where the action started. I can write down those first four entries right away because they're anyway going to be added to 0. Here's where the action occurs, and we'll get 0 there, but we're going to have first row minus the third row is going to produce, I guess, a 0. It's going to produce a 0 there, and then this row minus that is going to produce a 2. And then in the second row, 0, 0, 1, 2, nothing happens up to that point. But then when I subtract 2 times the third row from the second, I'm going to get 0. And 1 minus 2 times, that's going to equal 3. 0. Oh, sorry. Does that help? So 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, minus 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. Okay. All right, let's see. Last thing we got to fix is this 2 that's sitting above the pivot in the second row. And so we'll send row 1 to row 1 minus 2 times the second row. And now we'll get 1, 1, 0, 3, and this will be minus 1. This will be 3 minus 4, 0 minus 0 is 0, 2 minus 6 is, yeah, sorry, yeah, 2 minus 6 is going to be negative 4. And then we'll have 0, 0, 1, 2, 0, 3, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, minus 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. All right. And that's your reduced row echelon form. Okay, so that's the process. Always work systematically. When you're doing the row echelon form, you work from the upper top and work your way towards the bottom. When you're going from row echelon form to reduced echelon form, you start in this corner and you clear out entries, and you move over and clear out entries. If you don't follow sort of that pattern, working from upper left to lower right, and then from lower right to upper left, you end up going around in circles, and you're never going to get to reducial. Well, it's just by chance you end up at reducial echelon form. But if you follow this two-step procedure, you'll be naturally led to reducial echelon form. All right, so fifth problem. Oops, I'm about out of time. But this is an important problem that I want to do explicitly. So let me put it up on screen, and I'll just work directly on the screen here. Once you get to a matrix, an augmented matrix that's in reducial echelon form, that's going to correspond to the augmented matrix of the solution. So what you'll want to do then is, first of all, always look at where the pivots live. I have two pivots in this augmented matrix. And so that's going to mean that x2 and x3 are going to be fixed variables. And the other, the variables corresponding to the other columns on the coefficient side are going to be free. So what I'm going to do, first of all, is I'm going to write down the equations corresponding to this augmented matrix. X2 minus 2x4 plus x5 is equal to 1. The second row says that x3 plus x4 minus x5 is equal to 2. And the last two rows simply say 0 is equal to 0. So these are really the effective equations that come from this augmented matrix. What I'm going to do is I'm going to use these equations to express the fixed variables in terms of the free variables. So this is going to tell me that x2 is equal to 1 minus 1 plus 2x4 minus x5, and x3 is equal to 2 minus x4 plus x5. As you move these variables over to the opposite side, of course, they switch signs. And then you write down a solution vector, substituting where you can for these fixed variables. So x1 is free. There's no pivot in that first column. So we leave it alone. X2, we have an equation for 1 plus 2x4 minus x5. X3 is 2 minus x4 plus x5. And then x4 and x5 are free variables. Last step is to pull out the constants in each coefficient or each entry of this matrix. And then terms that are proportional to x1, well, only here, 3, 5. Term proportional to x4, that's going to be nothing in the first slot, 2 in the second slot, minus 1 in the third slot, 1 in the fourth slot, nothing in the fourth slot, and then x5 times 0, minus 1, plus 1, 0, 1. And now I've expressed a solution vector as a point on a hyperplane. This is your p0. This is your parameter times a constant vector. Call that v1. Call that vector v2, v3. And then basically, every solution vector is a point plus some parameter times one vector, another parameter times a second vector, a third parameter times a third vector. So it's going to be a three-dimensional hyperplane. Okay, oh, sorry, I ran 2 minutes over, but the last problem is computing the inverse. All you have to do is write the 3x3 identity matrix adjacent to that the given matrix and row reduce to reduced row echelon form. Yeah, you too.